that expire in 2020, I think December 2021. But there are a couple of year options. And the strike price, they only pay off if we have negative rates in the U.S. And everybody's been making a – I have a theory on this one that's a little bit different than somebody's just out there. And it's like 300,000 calls.
So, okay, back
it's
up.
A big number.
Back up. A euro-dollar is the interest on a dollar deposit in Europe, correct?
Or outside of the U.S.
Right. Oh, it used to be in Europe. That's why
yeah.
it's called euro-dollar.
Yeah, the official definition is outside the U.S. But I'll bet you 98.7% of it is in Europe.
All right, before we're talking totally over everybody's heads, I believe, even though I don't do much of this, if I walked into the local bank here, Lakeside, Harris, wherever it happens to be, with a pile of euros or British pounds, and I want to put them in my, quote, checking account, they're going to make me convert them into dollars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, now, but in Europe, you don't have to. They will take a dollar deposit, hence the name euro dollar, correct?
Yeah. It's one of the reasons currency trading is a much bigger deal in outside of the U.S. than in the U.S.
Right.
Even though it's a big deal everywhere. So the real point here is it's a pretty substantial position. It's over 300,000 contracts. And they own calls that only pay off, basically, if rates go negative in the U.S. And I don't think that somebody's speculating on that. What I think it is I think it's a financial institution that just in case we reach that point, they want to be able to continue to pay at least moderately positive interest rates. And the only way that they're able to do that is if they've hedged against that possibility. And when you hedge with options, you're just giving up a little bit of interest if you're wrong.
Well, you would think
again, the big hype story was somebody speculating going to make a ton of money if rates go negative. Personally, I think the only reason you would do something like that is if you have an awful lot to lose only if rates go negative.
Well, I would say that the risk you would – trying to figure out in the interest rates now, we just talked about a minute ago, the risk is for stuff that you and I do or know about. I mean, you don't warn me because you're the professor, but you would think that those hedges would be the other way. The General Motors has just financed, you know, $40 billion worth of cars, right, at 0%, and is worried about the rates going up.
Yeah.
That they would do the other side of that trade. They would buy the puts.
Yeah.
I mean, but the concern I have, and I just was reading this thing on this particular subject, they claim, whoever the theys were who wrote this article, claim that the institutions worldwide are gearing for the ability to have a cashless society.
Okay.
Now, if that happens, the ultimate taxation would be that all of a sudden you have a negative interest rate and everybody's cash that now only exists in the system, in the bank or whatever, essentially you subtract 1% a year from everybody. We talk about the ultimate taxation that you can't get around, except we would find all kinds of ways to barter stuff. I'd have guys that would paint your house and you'd turn around and do something for me.
Oh, I think there's still a whole, you know, the same parts of Chicago that have a lot of crime and shootings and whatnot. I think there's a lot of that still goes on.
Sure there is.
Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, I was never a Bitcoin person because to me, I don't really know that much about the system. I understand the system is very robust or could be.
It's got a little, it can get easily overwhelmed sometimes. That's one of the drawbacks right now.
But currency, all my economic studies on currencies, and maybe you were in Chicago, that's all we did, right?
Yeah.
We were big on currency because we were monetary theorist guys. I mean, a currency only derives its value from its value. Mm-hmm. Now you can say, what about fiat currencies? Do they really have any value? Well, they do until they don't. I mean, at least, right, at this point. But I mean, the idea that if there was no currency, that somebody somewhere would issue currency based on, you know, all the oil in Cushing, Oklahoma, or something like that, that people decided to use outside of a government, wouldn't surprise me at all. There would be a way for me to buy a car from you somewhere where I didn't have to go into the bank. Because if every time I put my money in the bank, they steal 2% of it, we'd find a way not to do that.
Oh, yeah. We would totally be buying stuff all the time.
And, you know, because, but I mean, if that's where they're headed, I mean, that's kind of where they're headed. I mean, Trump in some of his campaign speeches, when asked, I was reading this last week, what if the government goes broke? What's the big deal? Just pay everybody 80 cents on the dollar, like if it's a real estate trade. But Donald, it's not a real estate trade, you whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a little more serious. I mean, I don't know where this all ends. I mean, when you, my question to you is, what are we going to do if we've got unemployment rates, which, by the way, is a screwed up number, at all time lows, markets at all time highs, every politician and everybody saying how great the economy is, and we're pushing interest rates into the panic mode? What are we going to do if we ever have a problem again, or we
got no bullets?
Yeah, what are we going to do if not if we have a problem? If people agree we have a problem, because we may have a problem now, and only people seen it are a few of us. But
if enough people start reacting like we've got a problem,
right?
We're going to have a giant restructuring.
Of what? How would you even do that?
I don't know. What happens when, you know, a currency gets obliterated and they shave a couple of zeros off of it or something like that?
Well, what do you suppose?
I mean, really, it's going to be, there will be a day of reckoning with respect to the U.S. dollar if we continue in the direction that we're going, where what should be the real value of it will show up at some point, where, you know, the supply of money out there has gone up 8%, prices have hardly gone up at all. A lot more money chasing, you know, the same amount of, or slightly more goods. That disconnect will catch up with you at some point. But I think especially the guys with more gray hair like us have been expecting this to happen for some time. And earlier you used the phrase exhaustion with respect to the Fed. I think there's an exhaustion with this thought as well. I'm not saying it's not right and it's not eventually going to happen, but unfortunately I think that anybody that puts this on their, if it were on your top five lists of concerns 5 years ago, it's dropped off by now because it hasn't become it. Let's say you make one of these lists every year going into the next year. Five things I'm really worried about, and you kept putting inflation on there for a decade and it hadn't happened yet. You've probably given up on it, and that's probably about the time to really be worrying about
it. Why do you say, again, we're making the difference between the inflation that they're telling us? By the way, the GDP came out and just said that the PPE was 2.3%, which is high as it's been in a while.
Yeah, that was it had a squiggly number in the front of it.
Yeah,
and after it.
So why would you, when they tell you that the inflation rate is 2%? And your hospitalization has essentially gone up three times in 20 years. Why do you believe them? I mean, it's never been even, Russell. It's never been. It's like I was mentioning to Kevin earlier. It's not like we're going to double the price of everything like a stock app, like a stock dividend, where we all every $1 bill is now $2, and if I owe you $20, I now owe you $40, and everything gets adjusted. It's not. It wasn't like that in the '70s. Everybody thought it was all oil. It just happened to the spot where it started. And then it went to food because, oh, by the way, food uses a lot of petroleum in the delivery and the drying of soybeans and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's never even. It was even. Nobody care.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the point is, you get the raise and I don't. You know what I said? It's close to home. Is I used to do all of the inflation calculations at Pullman. The union had this. This is again the difference between people that are quote my age and guys that are 45 giving these reports.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you heard somebody say that there's never any inflation until there's wage inflation?
That is a common thought,
and
that's one of the things we got spooked by the wage inflation back when we had that Volmageddon thing. That was actually the catalyst behind it.
Okay, but what I'm going to say is
everybody expects it to show up in wages first.
But and I'm going to say. If you look at when Nixon got tossed out of office, which was in, what, 74?
Yep.
We had our first batch of inflation that year. I'm going to say it took at least 5 or 6 years before contracts came up, before unions got that in their contract, before it became part of, shall we say, society to where, mm-hmm. I mean, if Pullman would have signed a rail car contract with the MBTA in 1973, like right before this happened, or 72, where it became obvious, mm-hmm. no way in hell would we have had an inflation clause in that contract.
Right.
And the people who we bought the trucks from and the air conditioners from and everything, they would not have had clauses in their contract. But after dealing with this for 5 or 6 years, every contract became, since inflation became a way of life, it was in every contract, except now the union at Pullman, they, and I used to figure it out for the guys, they would get a bump every quarter, or every 6 months, or whatever the hell it was. I'm a salaried guy. I didn't get that. And
yeah.
At the end of the year, they go, we're going to give 3 to 5% raises to the people that are exempt or non-exempt or something. So they said, Tom, we like you. You're one of our best employees. We're going to give you 5%. I go, well, don't let the heart pop out of your chest. I'm the one who does the calculation. Those guys got 10% before they even got their raise. You just gave me a pay cut, which they did.
Yeah.
Really? My that paycheck was 6% lower than the value of the previous January. I mean, that's how bad it was. So that whole infrastructure. But at the tail end, Russell, and this is where I think Volcker made a real big mistake after reading back on it, looking back on it. Near the end, the CPI numbers, as we're seeing here, they're like a year or two or three lagging indicator.
Mm-hmm.
They get in the system, and it's somehow, I don't know why it's so late, but it is. And near the end, when you start pushing yourself to 82, 83, 81, there was no inflation.
Mm-hmm.
There was none. And yet, the numbers kept showing it. And people kept getting these raises based on these numbers that were essentially belching through that showed an inflation that wasn't there. So the last 3 or 4 years, guys are still getting raises, and people had to raise prices because of the wages. But out of the entire, I'm going to say, 9 to 12 year cycle, that was only the last 3 or 4 years. It certainly wasn't in the beginning, because nobody had a clause in their contract. And
that one was a shock inflation.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
It was money supply.
The oil thing.
No, it wasn't. It was as soon as we came with the Bretton Woods, as soon as we went off the gold standard to pay for the Vietnam War. I have it here in my in my book. I can show you the money supply started growing 7, 8, 9, 11% a year. And as soon as that happened, give it 6 months, a year, and inflation started to pop out.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm worried now. 8%. What are we doing with 8% money supply growth?
Well, it's keeping the banks going, I guess.
Well, and I listened to a Fed guy from back in those days, and he said we were on the Fed board, and the inflation was the oil. Because you're right, the oil embargo was the shock that started it, okay? But mm-hmm. the money supply had already been built, and it already started. So it landed there first. And the guy says, well, we felt it was a shock. We hoped it was just a shock. So we said, we're taking oil out of the calculation. Then it was food, and somebody says, well, you know what? There's so much food.
It costs money to ship stuff.
Dry stuff. And then he says, finally, after about a year and a half of this, we all looked at each other. We said, you know what? We can't take anything more out. We got inflation. I'm just saying, it's a very lagging indicator. And it starts, this time it has started in medicine. It started in taxes. Because it's in tuition. It's in education. Mm-hmm. Right now it's, because you look at this teacher's contract. Okay, you're not, but if you're in Chicago, mm-hmm. somewhere along the way in the next year or so, you're going to get a tax increase to pay for the education piece here.
Are they still out on strike?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're allegedly getting close, but no, they're still out on strike. So your property taxes that have probably doubled in the last 10 years, sort of like this hospitalization stuff, that's all education expense.
Yeah.
Yet if you look
no,
at
the
seat,
biggest part of it is if you break that sucker down, yes.
Okay, now if you look at the CPI, it's going to tell you, first of all, it doesn't include taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So the education that's in there is going to be higher education. So it's going to be 6% of your budget. But if you take the part that you're paying in property taxes, I'm going to say it's at least 15% of the roads budget where you live.
Mm-hmm.
At least. So we're not counting that either.
Yeah.
Right, so we're not counting that. We're not counting hospitalization, really. What else is there? That's the biggest chunk of your life.
Yeah, it's depending on how you choose to live. It absolutely is.
Because I mean, and plus that's, and I don't know how, if you and I were doing it, how do you equate if something goes up 10% like in hospitalization, versus 10% in, you know, cardigans or sweatshirts, what you and I wear. we only buy one, hopefully it'll last 5 years. I mean, it's not something you do every day. There's a big difference between 50 cents up on your toll bridge that you use every day.
Every day, and
$50 for your TV,
after
about
a week,
decade.
You don't think about it anymore. Yeah. That's another part of it.
But one is recurring and one isn't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, you and I buy a TV, the price of TV's down $200. So what? We still got the one we paid a grand for 5 years ago, and it's fine. It doesn't do us any good, really, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you buy a TV a day, which maybe you guys out in the burbs do. You know, you want every room.
No, I'm not buying a TV a day.
You got one in every room already?
No. We're pretty, we got three. We're one of the few houses out there that has fewer TVs than people.
You guys are unusual.
Yeah, no. No, kids don't have them in the room.
Really? You can't?
One in the basement, one in my wife and our bedroom, and one in the den.
Wow.
I know.
Not even one.
I mean, I grew up in a house that's a third the size of where I live now, and I think when my father passed away back in the summer, I think I ended up throwing out five TVs.
And they already old style, and nobody wanted them.
No. He was like, if I'm gonna spend the rest of my life watching TV, damn it, I'm gonna have a nice one. He had like a, he had like, you know, the 70-inch flat screen.
Really?
Oh yeah. He had a great TV.
I know people of the
South. But he was like, look, I spend 12 hours a day watching this thing. I'm going to get a really nice one. I'm like, okay. I got no objection to that.
It was such a South Side thing. We got a couple minutes left. We'll talk about, recap the Fed here. But whenever you got a new TV and the old one still worked, you'd never throw it out. You put it in the basement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I knew people.
One of my best friends was down in Oak Lawn.
Yep, that's what I'm talking about.
Every time I'd come visit in Chicago when I was not living here, I'd stay in his basement. I know exactly what a stereotypical South Side basement looks like.
You would never throw anything out that was working.
Yep.
But no, if somebody wanted it, you'd give it to them.
Yeah.
It was okay because it was still working. You don't waste anything.
Right, right.
Like dishes. You bring your dishes down to your cottage in Michigan City if you have one. You never get rid of them.
Right.
You would never just throw out perfectly good dishes.
Anything. Whereas we have like a couple of days a year where you can put everything you want on the curb.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could outfit an apartment with what shows up on the curb out where I live.
Well, in somebody's house, is somebody who's actually poor, mm-hmm. who needs dishes, should just go door to door.
Oh, they do? Well,
because somebody will say, you need a set of dishes, there you go.
The people that... are not as well off as where I'm fortunate enough to live, when they know what day it is when free garbage week is, where you can throw everything out, and there are people going, and they know what the dates are in different suburbs, and there are people out there with pickup trucks, and right. A lot of that, and I think it's great. A lot of that stuff is getting reused as opposed to thrown out. I think it's a great thing.
Well, my set of dishes, bought my first house.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt on my father's side, she was the only one left over there. The whole family died young. I was the first male to make it past 36 on that side. How scary is that? She bought me a set of dishes, and to this day, Audrey says, why can't you get a new set of dishes? Because my aunt bought these for me, and every time I use them, I think of her. All right, you got 30 seconds to tell us what the Fed's going to do.
They are going to cut, and they're going to give a clear indication that they're going to be very data dependent, but for now they're on hold.
And what's Trump going to say? How bad is he going to be?
Got to cut the rates! And then
under
his breath, got to cut more! And because I need to get reelected.
You think?
Got to cut more! The guy's a clown. Where did I get him from?
Do you think he even knows that the long-term rates around the world have been going up the last 8 weeks?
I doubt it.
Or does it?
Has it impacted him personally?
No.
There you go. I doubt it.
Oh, boy. Yep. All right, Russ, we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Let's talk between now and then. SP Futures up 2. NASDAQ Futures up 16. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks. Tell you all about what happened.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.